From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Radio Hour as we launch our 23rd year on the air. Much appreciate all of you who have supported us along the way, especially you, the listeners, and all our people who have helped to underwrite the program, and all our wonderful guests that we have had. It has been a complete honor and privilege to interview so many wonderful, wonderful people throughout the Diocese of Sacramento, throughout the country, Gabe, even throughout the world. You're pretty good at running these people down. We interviewed Father Alicio from Spain the other day about Bishop Alphonse Gallegos and his cause for sainthood, a former auxiliary bishop here in the Diocese of Sacramento. You know, I like to go to Catholic News Service, which is a official arm, if you will, of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and they have offices all over, and including a reporters in Rome, and you can learn all about what the Holy Father's up to, what any word coming out of Washington, D.C. about the various issues of the day, and the USCCB is not shy about taking positions on the issues of the day. The good thing about it is how well these issues are explained. It isn't just, well, we urge you to be on this side of the issue or that side of the issue. It has to do with church teaching and how church teaching is interpreted. As you, the Bible doesn't talk specifically about a lot of things in our modern world. It certainly talks about guidelines. We have the Ten Commandments to begin with, and everything will fit if you read the Bible closely enough, but you have to do some interpreting, and it's nice to have the people at the USCCB doing that as well. This is a story from Vatican City. Pope Francis had a special guest to help him illustrate the meaning of Christian freedom. A young boy wandered into his onto the stage during the Pope's general audience and made himself at home. I'm not quite sure. It's pretty hard to get close to the Pope. This young boy managed to do it. At his audience a couple weeks ago, the Pope was continuing his series of talks on St. Paul's letter to the Galatians and planned to reflect on the freedom that comes from serving and loving others. As the Bible passage is being read, 10-year-old Paolo walked onto the stage and right up to Pope Francis, who shook his hand. Papal aide offered Paolo a seat next to the Pope. I'm looking at a photo of it, and it's charming, it's touching, it's amusing, if you will. And there's Paolo's wearing a mask, and he is literally sitting right next to the Pope, and the Pope is just grinning ear to ear. He walked on the stage. Pope shook his hand. He sits down next to the Pope, which elicited applause from the crowd and from the little boy. But he did not stay seated long after clasping the Pope's hands again. Paolo pointed with amazement at the Pope's zucchetto. Moments later, the young boy could be seen happily bounding down the steps, returning to his mother wearing a brand new zucchetto on his head. Departing from his prepared remarks, Pope Francis said the boy's courage reminded him of what Christ says about the spontaneity and the freedom of children. Jesus tells us, if you do not become like children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. It is the courage to be close to the Lord, to be open to the Lord, to not be afraid of the Lord. I thank this child for giving this lesson to all of us. There is no freedom without love, the Pope went on. The selfish freedom of doing what I want is not freedom, because it comes back to yourself. It isn't fruitful. It is Christ's love that has freed us. And again, it is love that frees us from the worst slavery, that of the self. Therefore, freedom grows with love. The freedom St. Paul writes about does not imply a libertine way of living according to the flesh or following instinct, individual desires, or one's own selfish impulses. Pope added, rather, the apostle speaks of a freedom that is fully expressed in love. It is the love, these are the Pope's words, it is the love that shines out in gratuitous service, modeled on that of Jesus, who washes the feet of his disciples and says, I have given you an example. that you also should do as I have done to you, to serve one another, according to the Pope. St. Paul, the Pope continued, also warns about viewing freedom as doing what you want and what you like, which only leads to the realization that we are left with a great emptiness inside and that we have used badly the treasure of our freedom. Pope Francis said Christians need to rediscover the communitarian, not individualistic dimension of freedom, especially in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. The pandemic has taught us that we need each other, but it is not enough to know this. We need to choose it in a tangible way every day. Let us say and believe that others are not an obstacle to my freedom, but rather the possibility to fully realize it, because our freedom is born from God's love and grows in charity. Those are the words of Pope Francis. And if you go to Catholic News Service, you can see this charming photo of this young boy clapping his hands as he's sitting next to the Pope, who is just grinning. It's just great, great stuff. And, you know, a lot of that in a lot of great stories in Catholic News Service. You know, Thanksgiving just around the corner. And it's funny because clearly one of my favorite holidays, and probably one of the favorite holidays of many people. I mean, we're leaving out Christmas and Easter not as holidays, regarding those almost as holy days, even though they're not holy days of obligation. Of course, Easter is on a Sunday when we go to Mass, but Christmas is a holy day of obligation as well as a holiday, a secular holiday, if you will. But in terms of just secular holidays, Thanksgiving, even though obviously it had a strong religious basis, what were they giving thanks to? Who were they giving thanks to? To God. Thanksgiving, we're giving thanks to God, at least in its origins, and continues so today. Going to Holy Mass on Thanksgiving Day is a family tradition that is really a great way to start the day. Among many other things, of course, so we have the Run to Feed the Hungry. You can go to a very early Mass on Thanksgiving Day and still do the Run to Feed the Hungry, which feeds so many people. But I've always loved Thanksgiving Day, and yet I can remember two Thanksgiving Days better, well, three actually, better than any other.
Really?
Two of which didn't involve being around the big table with family. First, Gabe, I was a junior in college. My two sisters had been working on the East Coast for the summer, and two of my sisters, not my only two sisters, but two of my sisters, and they were going to drive back. In those days, there was an organization that if you wanted your car transported across, mm-hmm. probably still is today, they'd hired college kids.
Yeah.
And they'd drive across the country, and they got across the country for free, basically.
There's like an Uber service for it now. Yeah. Yeah, you can do that. Yeah,
yeah. And so my two sisters got this car on the East Coast, and they were going to drive back. And so they said, why don't you meet us halfway? It was Thanksgiving vacation from college. Hmm. So on the day before Thanksgiving, I flew to El Paso, Texas, and met my sisters. And we proceeded to drive across the southwest, New Mexico, into Arizona. And it's getting dark on Thanksgiving Day. We're going to get to Phoenix, and we're going to find like a hotel, mm-hmm. and eat Thanksgiving dinner in the hotel dining room. Mm-hmm. Like maybe even spend a little bit of money, which we didn't have.
Right.
You know, and we get about 50 miles out of town, just outside some little town, and the car breaks down.
Oh no!
It's getting dark. The cell phone has not. Alexander Graham Bell was still alive. Let's just say that.
Right.
You know? And the cell phone had not been invented. There were no payphones nearby. We're out on the Arizona desert.
But the car broke down. You mean the crank stopped cranking?
The horse
fell asleep. Right?
Yeah. And we're going, what are we doing? What are we doing? You know. And about every 10 minutes, one car would come by, look at the three of us, and keep going. My sisters finally say, hide in the bushes, Bob. Hide in the bushes.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Finally, somebody stops and takes us into town, which was about a 15-minute ride. And we see there's one fix-it. I mean, a town probably of 500 people. And one fix-it shop in town, one auto repair shop in town, a gas station. And it all closed up.
Of course.
But it was town's so small, you know that the guy was living upstairs.
Right.
You know, so
of course.
You climb the stairs and knock on the door, and his wife answers it. And she says, "We're about to have Thanksgiving dinner." And they said, we're 15 miles out here, and we see that tow truck in the in the driveway. He gets up from the table, gets in the tow truck, tows us into town. We look across the street, and there's the Milo Cafe with Thanksgiving dinner for, well, this will tell you how many years ago, for $1.99,
wow,
including pumpkin pie.
It's a good deal.
And to this day, that's one of my most memorable Thanksgiving, because somebody got up from Thanksgiving dinner, and you could see the little kids around the table, where's daddy going, you know,
right,
and
right.
helped us. And one other time was I was a young sports writer, and it was right at that time of year where the college football team I was covering was getting into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Basketball season was also starting,
mm-hmm.
and the family had planned to be like in Portland with relatives.
Okay.
And of course, I was supposed to go.
Right.
But my new job, there was no way I could leave it.
Right.
And I remember covering a game Thanksgiving afternoon and walking home. And I thought, well, I'll just walk by Taco Bell and get some food.
Yeah.
Closed. I'll go by Jack in the Box. They'll be open. Closed. McDonald's. Closed.
You know, seriously, McDonald's is close.
The grocery store. I'll buy a TV dinner with the turkey and the dressing the mashed potatoes and the little treat. Closed.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was like, oh, my gosh, the whole world is celebrating Thanksgiving. And I was alone. I wasn't poor. I had a place to go.
This picture of all these closed stores and you and like a tumbleweed going by.
Day. You know, and it's chilly outside. And I mean, it's not winter like it is in some places. But that one just seared into my brain the meaning.
Yeah.
The meaning of the day, because I was missing family.
Yeah.
And the final one I really, really remember, I've actually written about this one a couple of times, was about 30 years ago, 35 years ago, and 34 exactly. And families were going to go in various directions, scatter, and
right.
Some of us had gotten married, some of us...
It's a delicate dance as you start getting older, yeah.
Yeah, and we're so used to having it at my mom and dad's,
you know,
around their great big dining room table. And mom just always so looked forward to it. And just wasn't going to work out. A few people were going to go there. Somebody was going to go to in-laws, et cetera, et cetera. You're married. You know how that works.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
And my mom says, why don't we have Thanksgiving dinner on Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
No, we can't have it on Wednesday. That'd be wrong. Right. It'd be like having the 4th of July on the 1st of July, you know?
Turkey won't taste as good.
Yeah, and the more we, you can buy a turkey, the more we thought about it, everybody could make it.
Yeah.
All my brothers and sisters, the several grandkids that had been born, and there we were on Wednesday night, and it was all of a sudden it was Thanksgiving,
right.
Even though it was a Wednesday. And so we all did that, and I was living in the same town as my mom and dad. And the next morning, Thanksgiving morning, my mom calls me, and she says, I can't wake Dad up.
Hmm.
And so I rushed over there, and he had had a medical emergency,
mm-hmm.
and gone into a coma, and he died 13 days later ever waking up again. And had we not had Thanksgiving on Wednesday, and had that really a wonderful time, my dad was as alive. He was getting older,
right?
And he had Parkinson's and he had some problems,
but he enjoyed himself.
He was sitting there at the head of the table, being dad, and grandpa, and none of us knew that happy moment would be the last with him.
Yeah.
And I thank God every day
for
putting that in my mom's head to get us all together on Wednesday. Everybody was there, and we would have been scattered to the four winds.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's one of those stories where you think like, wow, that's I mean, it's one of those things, like, you know, obviously all of us have to go through that, and all of us are going to go at some point, but to be able to do it where you go to bed with a full belly and a happy face and, yeah, and a brain full of memories with your family, I mean, that's, yeah, I can't think of a better way to go about it.
You can't, yeah, I mean, looking back on, I mean, at the time, you know, it's a tragedy, but looking back,
There's something so much about Thanksgiving too that is that, because if it had been Halloween, you know, and all your kids and the grandkids all come over, it's like it wouldn't. There's something about that around the table family thing about Thanksgiving that just, and I know it's funny because Thanksgiving gets kind of looked over because there's, you know, there's no good Thanksgiving, you know, songs, there's no good Thanksgiving, you know, lawn art, you know, it's not, you know, people get those big blow up turkeys now, but like, it's just, there's really nothing about it that's consumerist, which is great, other than buying the dinner.
Yeah. You don't go into CVS or Rite Aid or something and see Halloween candy.
Right.
I mean, Thanksgiving candy, right, or Thanksgiving displays or,
right,
or anything.
I mean, you get the fall displays and Thanksgiving, right, kind of gets, right, lumped in with that. You get like the Horn of Plenty and all that kind of stuff. But in reality, it is solely about, you know, for some people it's about watching football and you go out and play football and all that kind of stuff. But so, you know, a lot of people it's about knee injuries. But it really is. It's just about being with your family and loved ones that you want to be with.
You know, the weird thing is, and that's always kind of been one of my pet peeves. You'll see the food section maybe the week before in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be a big turkey shaped like football.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, when Dad's watching football on Thanksgiving Day,
mm-hmm,
there's one college football game on TV,
right?
And there's three pro games on TV,
right?
On any Saturday in the fall, there's about 126 college football games, mm-hmm, on TV,
and you know the score to every single one of them,
by
the way.
I do. And on Sunday, there's about 16 NFL games,
right?
And yet Thanksgiving,
right,
somehow is football day.
It's just because it's one of those things, until the consumerism of the NFL came into play and they realized, hey, we can do this every Thursday. Thursday was that weird, like, oh, football on Thursday.
But, you know, with rare exception, they're not necessarily big games. They were scheduled at the start of the year. They're not the Rose Bowl.
It's always the Lions and somebody. The Lions have been good for 30 years.
Yeah, teams don't even care about.
Right, exactly.
You know,
so. I know. It's funny how that works. But you know what? It's a, I don't know. I love Thanksgiving. It's always been one of those holidays that I loved, and had nothing really to do with the food, because the food to me is always so secondary. It's not a big deal.
It's interesting because turkey is just about the cheapest meat there is.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, you know, I can remember the days when it was, if you spent, I don't know, $50 or more, they tossed in the turkey.
I remember I was at the store this week. It's funny. My son said, he goes, hey, Dad, the turkeys are for sale right now. I was like, yeah. He's like, why don't we just do Thanksgiving all the time? Like,
yeah.
It doesn't make it a special, buddy. But I looked at the turkey I looked at was like a, you know, turkey would feed my whole family and a few more probably. It was like $24. And then you go look over at the section with red meat, and a steak is $24.
Yeah, one steak.
So, right. So it's like, this isn't exactly like, you know, the most delicate meat in the world. You know, it's like there's like two good white meat breasts, and the rest of it is like, are you a drumstick person? You have to kind of ask. Like, everyone likes the breast meat, but it's like one of those things where you're like,
I like the dark meat.
I don't like it's a little oily for me.
Oh.
But yeah, but it's funny because
way more flavor.
Right, but you have to ask people. It's like everyone goes
Max
through the white meat.
We could
right
live together.
We could, yeah. Yeah, we could tear up a whole turkey. But yeah, I love Thanksgiving. I'm looking forward to it. It's, you know, not too far off, and then literally a month later is Christmas.
And thank goodness for people like the Sacramento Food Bank that, you know, provides turkey and fixings for people in need. It's just so. So important. Loaves and Fishes does a meal, and you know, everybody is really. I think if if every day was Thanksgiving Day, maybe we wouldn't quite have so many so much division in
that's,
our country. Right?
That's the rub with all of our holidays, though. You know, when Veterans Day just passed, I remember a couple of my friends saying, you know, we should probably honor the veterans every day, not just one day a year, yeah, kind of thing. It's like one of those things. I think if you could harness this, the way you feel on these holidays, this time of the year, all of them, towards your fellow man and woman that maybe.
Well, you know, too, it's important to think about. There may be a neighbor or two who is alone and has nowhere to go And maybe it's a little tiny bit awkward, but by golly, ask him to join your Thanksgiving.
You've invited me to every Thanksgiving dinner since I've met you. Am I the awkward neighbor in your mind?
You're the awkward neighbor. Yes, yes. Let's invite Gabe. Yeah, but you know, people. They don't realize, and we've done that a few times where we think there's a neighbor that's somebody who's single, living alone, that probably is not. We still see their car in the driveway. We still see, and just go over and knock on the door and say, "Hey, we're just putting dinner on the table. Wouldn't you like to join us?" Well, we had the chance to sit down with Misty Hawkins, who is a Davis resident who spent a week in the country of Haiti, working primarily at an orphanage as a Christian missionary with a Christian mission group. It's not a Catholic church orphanage, but it is run and founded by Catholics. And I think most of the people on this Christian, it wasn't a requirement that you be Catholic, but they were certainly doing the Lord's work. And we had a chance to sit down and talk with her about her experiences in the country of Haiti, which is so troubled in so many ways. We're going to bring you that interview now. Glad to be welcoming in Misty Hawkins, a parishioner at St. James in Davis, to talk to us about an experience she had recently in the country of Haiti. Misty, good day to you.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Unfortunately, we're doing things by phone these days, but thank God for Alexander Graham Bell. You know, because
exactly.
He allows us to communicate. You just came back from a mission. You were a missionary, a Christian missionary, in the country of Haiti, which has been in the news, well, for quite some time for a variety of reasons in the last week or so because of the Christian missionaries who were kidnapped, 17 of them. And we're glad you're home. And praying for all of those people. Tell us about how this came about and the group you went with.
Yeah. So this was my second mission to Haiti. Back in 2012, I went to Haiti with Medical Team International, which was not a Christian organization, but as you would expect, most of the people involved in the organization were Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went in 2012, we flew into Port-au-Prince, and we drove north to a remote clinic outside of Port-au-Prince, and we taught the nurses how to deliver complicated pregnancies,
mm-hmm.
So, for example, how to do breech deliveries and shoulder dystocias and toxemia. And when we left, they said that you will always come back to Haiti, and I was feeling like I wasn't sure that I ever would come back to Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a life-changing experience, but I was really happy to come home and grateful for the way that we're able to do things in the United States. But I had met a friend named Angie Harrison through an Endow program. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Endow, but it's a Catholic program that I went through when we lived in Colorado,
mm-hmm.
and it's education on the nature and dignity of women. And we were training women from each parish in Boise to be leaders for the Endow program. And I met a friend named Angie, who was a nurse like I was, and she had had her six children, and she was currently getting her nurse practitioner degree so that she could be a missionary. So as you would expect, we had like-minded hearts, and we became very good friends, and we had done a few other health-related projects together, but she called me a few weeks ago and asked if I would be interested in going to Haiti. And, of course, I didn't ask any questions because I trust her, and I said, sure. And before we moved to Davis, Angie had introduced me to a man named Sean Forrest and his wife, Julie, who had relocated to Boise, but they had started an orphanage in Haiti in the early 2000s.
But he was originally from Boise?
He was originally from the Northeast, but he had moved to Boise because he heard it was a great place.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, he has actually relocated back to Tennessee because it was too difficult for him to travel between Boise and Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
It it took all day, and he has three children. But what Sean did is he is in Catholic teen music and music ministry, so he speaks through at a lot of Catholic teen programs throughout the United States, and his music is fantastic. But what he does is he fundraises to support the mission in Haiti. So his project in Haiti started out as an orphanage, and now the orphanage has 38 children. Three of them are profoundly handicapped. I would imagine they have severe cases of cerebral palsy. They're basically recumbent, wheelchair-bound, and they're fed. They don't speak. They do smile. They're wonderful. They know when Sean comes around, he's like their father. So though he lives in the United States, he travels frequently, at least every other month for 2 weeks, to spend time with his kids in Haiti. So Sean started the orphanage, and then, of course, as you would expect, he recognized the need for education. So he built a school that now educates 350 students. The young kids up to about third grade go in the morning from 7 to noon, and the older kids go from noon to 5. And this population that attend the school draws from a large area, but none of the kids go to school on a bus. None of the kids go to school in a car. Most of the kids walk at least an hour
each
way to get to school.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Some of the wealthier, quote-unquote, families are able to pay 20 cents to rent a motorcycle ride for their kids to and from school. And I was told that the maximum that they usually carry on a standard motorcycle is 6 kids, which is incredible. 3 on the front and 3 on the back. I personally saw 2 on the front and 2 on the back.
That sounds like some stunt college kids would pull.
It's so funny, and the kids, they love it. We traveled frequently between the orphanage and the school when I was there, and the roads are very treacherous, very deep ruts. You have to cross the river 3 times. The kids walk to school every day in the dark with no flashlights. They take their shoes off and their socks off each time they cross the river.
Wow.
When it rains and it's too treacherous to take that route to school, there's an alternate route, but it takes twice as long, and they don't have to cross the river that way. So that was really very interesting.
So the kids in the orphanage, where are their parents? I mean, what happened to their parents?
So most of their parents have died. Many of them died in the earthquake. So kids have come into the orphanage at different ages. Some were very young, some were young teenagers. There are several sets of siblings at the orphanage. Well, I believe I said there are 38 kids there now. And recently, the government agency that regulates the orphanages has told them that their kids that are over 18 will be aging out and can no longer stay in the same home with the younger kids. So they are being relocated to an existing facility that the mission owns that currently has the elderly. So this is another area of the mission. In Haiti, families are so poor, and they often live in multi-generational housing situations. So they may have a hut that's 8 feet square, and possibly 10 yards away, the son and his children will live in a hut of the same size. And when they are very poor and they have not enough food for everyone to eat, the elders often volunteer to go away so that the food can be used for the younger, healthier generations. And these elder people often just wander into the wilderness and wait to die.
Oh, wow.
So Sean Forrest found out that this was going on, and he recognized that that is not how to turn Haiti around. And acting as God's hands and feet, he literally took a couple of other strong men, and they took a lawn chair out into the wilderness, found their first person, brought them back, gave them housing, gave them food, someone to care for them. They get visited by the children at the orphanage. Now there are usually between 5 and 10 grandmothers and five or ten grandfathers who are able to be visited each day by the children at the orphanage. So it's quite a beautiful thing.
Wow. And that's all in the sort of the same complex?
It's about probably about a half a mile apart.
Uh-huh.
The land is not adjacent, but it's all owned by the mission.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just completing a beautiful new facility for the elderly. So the women's elderly facility and the men's elderly facility are adjacent to the new facility where they'll be relocated. And when they vacate those two existing homes, the older girls and the older boys will move into those homes.
So on the news, of course, especially since the assassination of the president, we see nothing but chaos, and it's primarily Port-au-Prince. And you were about, 80 miles from Port-au-Prince?
We were, 80 miles west.
So were you in what you would term a relatively safe part of the country? Were you afraid for yourself, for mm-hmm. the kids, et cetera?
So I was never afraid for our safety. I did notice, and it was the same when we were in Haiti the last time, there are walled perimeters around each of the facilities that have the rolls of barbed wire.
Mm-hmm.
But those at the location where we were this time, those are to prevent people from coming in and stealing the food.
Mm-hmm.
The mission is able to provide food for the elderly and for the orphans.
Right.
So that's what that protection is for. I never felt unsafe. They, even with it's only 80 miles, but it's a 5 or 6 hour ride by car.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the turmoil and the gang violence over the last year, the mission has been helicoptering missionaries from Port-au-Prince at the airport directly to the mission grounds. So we never left the airport, either when we were arriving or when we were departing. So I did always feel that we were safe.
And they're regular commercial air flights, out of Miami to Port-au-Prince?
Yes. Yes, exactly. It's a little less than an hour flight.
Mm-hmm. And and Haiti is part of Hispaniola, the island, along with the Dominican Republic.
Dominican Republic, yes. Yes.
Wow.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful country. The weather is very temperate. The climate is beautiful. We had one rainstorm while I was there, and it was so crazy. It was loud, torrential rain, mm-hmm. and the road, if you can call it a road, there are no paved roads, obviously. It's very dirt. No one has a vehicle. There are no roads that would be even normal Jeep worthy. We had raised ATVs to travel back and forth from the orphanage to the school and to the medical clinic, which was our primary focus. And there was a day when we could not travel between the river was too high and mm-hmm. the roads were too slick.
And it's probably 85 degrees when it's raining.
It was great. And we were in we stayed at the orphanage, which is adjacent to the chapel. And the orphanage has quarters on the second floor for missionaries. So it had running water. There were regular toilets. There, for a shower, you just did a bucket pour shower. So that was a little bit like camping out. But no air conditioning, of course, but it was warm enough without heating. And the food that they served us breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and it was quite adequate, a lot of chicken and potatoes. That's pretty much, and plantains.
Oh, yeah. I can handle chicken and potatoes.
Yeah, that's right.
You're not going to get any complaints from me.
Yeah. So another thing that we did while we were there is their most recent bill is a clinic that supports the territory there. It's called the St. Mary Teresa Medical Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to go through all of the supplies and label things and get them organized in French and English. And we taught the nurse there what some of the supplies were a lot of the things she wasn't quite sure what they were used for, so it was quite a mess. But we got that organized. We organized some of the pharmacy packets for frequently prescribed medications. We were able to do that. We did make a house call to one quadriplegic, and this was probably the most touching experience because you could really see that the poor and needy from Haiti, those who can't take care of themselves, they really provide for the rest of us an opportunity to serve and care for them and to do what Jesus asked of us, because it takes a lot of humility and grace on their part to let us serve them.
Sure.
So that this quadriplegic, his name is Jean Simone, and he has been bedridden for probably 7 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And he had scars all over his back from previous bed sores that had healed, and he had a terrible one now. And as you can imagine, it's difficult to see that. It's difficult to smell that. It's difficult to wash that.
Right.
But it's important to do that, and how much more difficult is it for him to allow us to
exactly,
do that?
Exactly.
So, yeah. The country itself is, it's really like nothing that you would see in the United States. I often have people ask me, why do you travel to do mission projects outside of the United States when there are so many poor here? But it's an entirely different level of poverty in the third world countries, especially in Haiti. I mean, in the United States, even if you're poor, you know that there is some sense of government and law. You know that there's electricity. You may not have it if you're homeless, but you know that it's available. You may not have plumbing, but you know that there's clean water available in the United States. There's transportation. You may not have money to travel, but the ability to travel is here. We have the roads. We have the infrastructure. We have sanitation. We have garbage companies that take away the trash. And in Haiti, they don't have any of that.
It's. Can you compare 2002, I know it's hard to generalize, you're in a specific area, but can you compare 2012 to 2021?
So the interesting thing, in 2012, it was after the earthquake in 2010 and after the cholera outbreak that followed that.
Right.
So the country was just beginning to find homes for all the orphans. So from that standpoint, I think they're further along. But it's more dangerous now, I think. There's a priest, Father Rick Frechette. I'm not sure if you've heard of him, but he founded St. Damien's Pediatric Hospital.
Right.
Yeah. And one of his nurses was kidnapped 2 weeks before we left on our mission trip. And I thought he just was inspired to make this wise decision of how to handle the ransom request. He shut down the pediatric hospital.
Mm-hmm.
He shut down the school. He shut down his orphanage, and because of the pressure, there was no place for anyone to take children to a hospital while it was shut down. It was shut down for 24 hours before the gangs released her.
Wow.
Which is pretty remarkable.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So these hostages that were taken, they were on what, a bus, presumably transporting themselves to Port-au-Prince or in that area?
That's my understanding. There's not a lot of clear information, but they were intercepted in one vehicle, is my understanding, by the gangs, and they are being held for ransom still at $1 million
per person.
Yeah.
And that's why when you would land Haiti 180, they would helicopter you to the site.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So we never left the airport.
Yeah. So is this ransom, grabbing people for ransom, pretty common? And do they, when they do get released, are they okay? I mean, other than the terror they've been through?
Well, unfortunately, it's become really common recently, especially since the presidential assassination. In fact, I believe that Haiti is one of the most dangerous countries right now for kidnapping.
Yep.
And the research that I've done, the people who are released have not been well fed, but they have been fed, and they're essentially okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been
extremely frightened, I'm sure.
What, it's been a week and a half now, almost 2 weeks, yeah. I think. Yeah.
Yeah. We came home Friday and they were kidnapped on Saturday.
Yeah. So is there a sense in Haiti of, I mean, when like you say, when you watch the news reports, and of course the news goes for the juggler, that's what the nightly news is about. And is there a sense of, I mean, do people go to jobs? Or is there a police force? Is there a government that's functioning?
So there is not, which is interesting because they were talking about the oversight of the orphanages when there's chaos in Port-au-Prince, which was the head of the government. So in Port-au-Prince, many people are not going to work. There was a transportation strike, clothing industry strike, and some other people were on strike. But in Port-au-Prince, it's very much affected by the gangs. It's very widely known where the dangerous areas are, and people are flocking to the country as they can. There was no sense of danger from the Port-au-Prince area in the country where I was.
Mm-hmm.
It's far enough detached. Like I said, it would take 6 hours to travel, and there are no roads directly to this area. It's a very small village out of the way. It takes, I believe, 50 minutes on a motorcycle to get to a paved road from where we were, where you could catch a bus.
What was the terrain like where you were? I mean, I hear that Haiti is just a beautiful country.
It is. It was hilly. It was mountainous. There were rivers. The rivers appeared to be clean, but remember, they bathe. They wash their motorcycles and their clothes in the rivers, so they are contaminated, and you don't want to drink that water. But it appears to be clear. The roads, like I said, they're deeply rutted. They're hilly. It's very green because they get a lot of water, and the climate is such that it allows greenery to grow well. We don't do a lot of farming, unfortunately. No fresh vegetables. There were passion fruit, which was fabulous. They made passion fruit juice for us. That was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But other than plantains and passion fruit, I didn't see fresh fruit either.
So you said you ate chicken a lot. Are they raising their own chickens, or is there a market?
So they did take us to a market. We walked about 2 miles, again, through the river to get to the local market.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a parking lot of burros as you approach the market. They have donkeys, and that's how they transport their goods and how people come to the market. But the market primarily has beans, rice, I saw some dried fish. That was one thing. They don't sell any meat other than the dried fish at the market. No fresh vegetables. They had some root vegetables, some squash that I saw. No souvenirs to pick up and bring home. They don't have that kind of thing. Ironically, they do have chickens, but the orphanage doesn't really have eggs. So I'm presuming that they do butcher their own chicken, and then they must have a source that raises them that's not at the market as well.
So there's some sense of commerce, but not a lot.
Correct.
Yeah.
There are no stores. The market is once a week, and I noticed there were two homes that I saw that have a window, and on the exterior of the windowsill, they'll set items like maybe drinks or candy or chips, something like that. They will set on the windowsill, and that's their idea of a store.
And what are people doing for money?
A lot of people work for the mission. Uh-huh. There are teachers employed by the school. There are caretakers and cooks employed at the orphanage and caretakers at the elder home. There's a Sister Florence, who's a sister of charity, is now the orphanage manager, and I doubt she gets much pay. But other than that, so it's very competitive and very desirable to have a job with the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually creates a little bit of controversy, and concern about nepotism, because the people in charge of the mission can basically dictate the commerce that goes on with regard to goods passing through the mission hands. That was a little bit of a problem that I recognized while I was there.
Were you able to use your skill as a nurse as well?
Well, like I said, we did go to the one man who was the quadriplegic.
Right.
We did a home visit there.
Right.
I worked at the clinic. We organized. We did some pharmacy things. But the primary purpose of the mission is awareness,
mm-hmm.
and to go and love on the people. So I brought a couple of games that I taught the kids. One is called Set. The other one was called Sky Joe. And I specifically chose those two games because there would be no language barrier. Once they could learn how to play, they're numbers and pattern recognition games that don't require
mm-hmm.
conversation. And they loved them. They absolutely loved them.
And you described, hanging swings for some of the kids?
We did. Anthony and James Harrison are benefactors of the mission, and they brought some new swings to hang. And that was another one of the most touching moments while I was there, because the kids were so excited about the new swings. And as I was walking around outside while they were swinging, they started singing the Alleluia.
Oh, wow.
Alleluia. Yeah. And I was going, I nudged Angie. I said, Angie, do you hear that? She said, what? I said, they're singing the Alleluia. And when they finished, they started singing On You Stay.
Oh, wow.
We told us, take our time. It was just the most beautiful thing that you would never see here.
I'll bet you're getting chills.
It was touching, yeah.
Wow.
Very joyful kids for what they don't have. They're just joyful people.
And I presume one of the goals of having missionaries come is that you come back home and spread the good word.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks for that opportunity. So Sean's mission is to create an opportunity to form well-educated leaders of faith for the future of Haiti and make sure that every child in their care has a childhood filled with love and joy. And I think they're accomplishing their goal.
Well, I've gone to the Haiti 180 website, and I would encourage other people to go to the Haiti 180, or that's the number 180 website, and look into the faces of these kids and some of the very elderly, and see the joy and the love of Christ in their eyes. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and then if it is tugging on your heart and you have any feeling like you'd like to do a mission trip, they do take families. There's really nothing much better for children than to see how other children live in other parts of the world, especially those in poverty, and to go and play with them. The kids just love to play. But the mission trips last less than a week. They cost $1,050, and half of that is a donation to the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a $350 now fee for the helicopter transport. So it's $1,400, and you're there for full 5 days, 6 days. You'd also need to get your transportation to Port-au-Prince, but it's just a life-changing experience.
But it's something, too, that maybe a parish could sponsor somebody, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, would help defray it a lot. You know, I should mention that, Misty, your hometown of Happy Camp was one of those areas here in the Diocese of Sacramento, Siskiyou County, where your mother just did some incredible work for that parish.
Yeah, my mom is an artist. My mom was a stay-at-home mom and an artist, and she painted the Stations of the Cross. So there are 14 Stations of the Cross and a very large painting of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Hmm.
And last summer of 2020, there was a horrible fire that destroyed much of the town, and it destroyed the church. And as the church was beginning to burn down, the local sheriff and the deacon there were able to rescue all of the paintings, most of the paintings, the Stations of the Cross and the Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Wow.
They were able to salvage those, and actually I was able to bring the large Our Lady of Guadalupe down to St. James, my home parish, mm-hmm. until they can rebuild the church in Happy Camp. So that's hanging in our chapel.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Your mom's name is Diane Hokanson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at Hokanson and Hawkins, and I'm going, you didn't have to change your name very much. You could almost sign the same autograph.
I know.
I think all the letters are there.
Very close.
Very close. That's great. Well,
and
yeah.
My dad was a coach. My dad was a basketball coach.
Yes. Yeah. A well-known basketball coach at Happy Camp.
And then I married a coach. Yep.
Yeah. And you married a coach, the head football coach at UC Davis, Dan Hawkins.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got sports in your blood.
Yes.
For sure. For sure. And you know, it was All Saints Mission, and you're going to rebuild it, right?
My mom is working hard on that. Yeah, she's hoping that the placement of Our Lady of Guadalupe at St. James and Davis is only temporary.
She's probably going to have to fight to get it back.
Our Lady of
Guadalupe is so iconic in California. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, and so so beautiful. Yeah. Well, Misty, it's just a joy to talk with you. Thanks for sharing your experiences there, and I hope that this will inspire other people to, if not go to Haiti, go, as you say, and families can go, and you're right, kids, boy, I know with my own kids, seeing other kids in situations that were foreign to them was so eye-opening for them.
Yeah, that's great, and even if you're not able to make a mission trip to Haiti, it's so dangerous now that many mission opportunities are being canceled.
Right.
But they're still in dire need of funding. So if you would look at the Haiti 180 website, and if God is calling you to contribute to something special above and beyond what you normally do, I would highly recommend them as a wonderful way to give back.
Very good. Well, that's great advice too. If you, as you say, everybody can't do it, and everybody right now, people are probably a little skittish, and like you say, some are even canceling the trips, but you can always contribute, and it's just Haiti, and the number 180 is the name of the mission. Misty, so great of you to be on the air with us. Thanks, and God bless you and your family, and we'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you, Bob. God bless you, too. Take care.
Thanks so much. That's Misty Hawkins, who... Wow, that's quite a story, and you know, you just say, "I'll see you later, dear. I'm going off to Haiti for a week." Wow, especially in this this day and age, we should point out in terms of speaking of people in need, we talked to Angela Hassel, the executive director of Loaves and Fishes, yesterday, and they are, as you might imagine, the recent rainstorm, if you want to call it that, hurricane, whatever it was, bomb cyclone is what the meteorologists were calling it, really has wiped out all the supplies of the tents and everything of the homeless in the Sacramento area. Angela described some of their clients coming to Loaves and Fishes, and their blankets, you could just wring them out. They were so sopping wet, and the clothing no longer wearable. They say they're in desperate need of shoes, either used or gently used, or new shoes, sleeping bags, tents, any kind of warm weather items, hats, gloves, sleeves, coats, all sizes, and you can deliver them to 1351 North C Street right here in Sacramento, or you can ship them through Amazon directly. You go on Amazon and order them, find what you, and you know, all sizes, all ages, and have them shipped to 1351 North C Street to Loaves and Fishes. We also should point out that the bishops have come out with a statement in California in partnership with Catholic health systems and Catholic charities throughout the Golden State. The Catholic bishops of California urge all Californians to receive a vaccination to prevent the continued spread of the deadly COVID-19 pandemic that has claimed the lives of more than 2 million people worldwide. As the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith has said, the vaccines now available and offered, the Pfizer and Moderna, are those currently in the testing approval process, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, are morally permissible and can be used in good conscience. Beyond simply protecting their own health and safety, Catholics also have an obligation to protect their family, friends, and community by vaccinating as soon as feasible in accordance with public health guidelines and protocols in their area. One should always consult with their doctor regarding any personal medical concerns. I'm going to get my booster shot tomorrow, so I'm happy about that. And a lot of people are now getting their boosters as well. And one final thing before we go to break. The Dixie Fire, which may have broken all records, it was for the longest time the second biggest fire in California history, and may have even crossed our producer, Gabe Sorensen, worked on the Dixie Fire. And he worked on the Caldor Fire, but they almost combined. And the Dixie Fire is so devastating. William Jessup University, a private Christian university in Rockland, we'll be hosting a college basketball game against the UC Davis Aggies men's basketball. Coaches Jim Less of UC Davis and Lance Van Vogt of William Jessup. They're the Warriors. It's not the Golden State Warriors, but they're close. They have gotten together, and it will be the first Division I basketball game ever at William Jessup's gym on the William Jessup campus, 2121 University Avenue in Rockland. All the proceeds, it's a $25 donation to get into the game. All the proceeds will go to help through the Red Cross to help victims of the Dixie Fire. And it's this Saturday, 7:30 p.m., Saturday, October 30th, 7:30 p.m., 2121 University Avenue in Rockland at the William Jessup Gym. Be great basketball and a great great event, and good for both William Jessup and UC Davis for getting together and having this special game. Again, 7:30 p.m. this Saturday at William Jessup. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support.
I was sure by now, God, you would have reached down and wiped our tears away, stepped in and saved the day. But once again, I say amen, and it's still raining. As the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain, I'm with you. And as your mercy falls, I'll raise my hands and praise the God who gives and takes away.